When we try to gather in the mind and make it peaceful, we call it meditation practice, or kamatana, which literally means a place of work. So there is a monk practicing kamatana, a layperson practicing kamatana. Both are the same. It refers to one who constantly trains the mind, contemplating and examining their own heart, to seek for true happiness within this mind. We begin from the very first day, where the mind is all over the place, but we practice every day, sitting in meditation, and the mind becomes calmer and cooler. Rapture arises, and we attain a certain level of success in meditation. The chemicals of inner happiness that exist within the mind will be released. There is no need to seek happiness anywhere outside. So there is worldly happiness, and there is beyond the world happiness. There is the happiness that still depends on external things, forms, sounds, smells, tastes, tangible sensations, and external mental objects. And there is a happiness that arises from inner virtue, from samadhi, meditative concentration, and the happiness that arises from knowledge and understanding of the Dhamma, which is even greater. It is truly remarkable, something we never thought could be possible. Simply sitting in meditation brings happiness already. We can feel fulfilled every day. It becomes food for the heart, and its flavor is different. And when this fulfillment of the heart becomes abundant and turns into rapture, it can make us not want to eat food at all. Yet we still eat so that the body can continue to survive. So the Brahma gods do not consume food, because they have rapture as their food for the heart. The devas, the divine beings, still need to consume celestial food, but Brahmas abide in concentration and with rapture nourishing the heart, so that their celestial body can continue to exist. If a practitioner has ever experienced rapture lasting for half a day or a whole day, they may perhaps understand this, which is indeed possible. When we contemplate this body and see it as the four elements, realizing that it must die, it means that we are not being careless. If we contemplate and see this clearly, the mind becomes deeply moved and sobered, and a stillness and tranquility arise. This is contemplating the body in terms of its natural course of passing away, or called death. The mind can then become still and tranquil. Here is where the mind is in samadhi, concentration. And this quality of concentration is a dhamma that arises as a treasure, as a noble wealth arising in the heart, possessing immeasurable value. And from this concentrated mind, the mind then begins to fabricate thoughts, such as, when seeing a dead person, what occupation did he have? But when the mind develops awareness and sees through that fabrication, it realizes that there is nothing there. A moment ago, it was still and quiet. There was nothing at all. There was no deceased person. Or if there was a deceased person at first, but when the mind became peaceful and still, there is nothing at all. But when mental fabrication arises, it becomes a matter of a being, a person, a self, us and them. Mindfulness knows and keeps pace with those mental fabrication, and then understanding arises, the Dhamma is seen, and the mind becomes radiant. And it's remarkable that when our mind sees the Dhamma in this way, the mind becomes bright, fulfilled, and filled with rapture, because it has seen the truth. If we see things according to the world, whatever we see contains me and mine, our possessions, wealth, buildings, homes, ourselves, or the people we love, and the mind clings to them. Although rapture may arise if we receive an object that pleases us, but it is worldly. It causes attachment, binding and fastening our mind even more tightly. When the things we love and delight in become separated from us, then suffering and sorrow arise. That is why it is not a lasting happiness. Venerable Ajahn Chah gave the example that if we grab a snake by its tail and hold on without letting go, the snake's head will turn back and bite us. When we cling to happiness, we will also receive suffering. But we don't see it. We think there's no danger. But when concentration has arisen, and we contemplate, and wisdom arises, rapture can then arise in the mind. It is hard to believe that such a thing is possible. We may have read in the scriptures that this body is not a being, a person, a self, or anyone at all. We read it and reflect upon it, wondering what it really is like. It's not a person, not ourselves, and not even a living being. It is nothing of that sort. When wisdom arises in our mind, and we look at people, we see them in that way. There is nothing there. There are no people, no living beings there, no self, and no others at all. There are only elements that are currently arising and passing away according to their nature. We ourselves are like that as well. When we look and see clearly, the mind sees the Dhamma, and rapture and happiness arise. It is though the energy of the concentrated mind, together with the contemplation of wisdom, is used to destroy defilements and delusion. Knowledge arises, and delusion disappears. The mind that was once dark becomes bright. The heart is fulfilled. Rapture arises, and one is deeply moved by the Dhamma of the perfectly self-awakened Buddha. Just as we feel deeply touched when making merit and giving offerings, we become fulfilled and joyful in the heart. And when we make merit and give offerings, we don't wish for anything in return. We give with wisdom, that is, with letting go and without choosing. It's not, I want to do this or I want to do that. Rather, within the heart, we do it for the benefit of the Buddha's dispensation, doing it with inner letting go. Yet after doing so, the heart becomes fulfilled and joyful. And we observe the moral precepts. When we have the opportunity to keep the 5 precepts or 8 precepts, happiness and fulfillment arise in the heart. A person who has given much offerings may still be unable to keep the precepts. The money they acquired may not have been entirely pure. But one who keeps the 5 precepts and calms the mind can furthermore know and see the Dhamma. Therefore, sila, morality, has great value. It's a noble treasure, an Aryan treasure, higher than generosity. The more we are practitioners of meditation, the more we must strive to train ourselves. Strive to cultivate mindfulness in the present moment, and strive to train the mind to become peaceful. Maintain the mind so that it neither delights nor dislikes. Listening to Dhamma is also a means of increasing mindfulness and wisdom. When I had not yet ordained, I was the same. I liked listening to Dhamma, studying Dhamma, and practicing at the same time, increasing faith step by step, from generosity to morality and from morality to meditation. And when practicing meditation, I gradually began to understand the matter of conventional reality and ultimate reality, without even intending it to be so. When listening to the Dhamma teachings of Venerable Ajahn Chah, who gave examples concerning convention and ultimate reality, I saw that all the material objects and all the halls are merely conventionally designated things. There is no such thing as small or large. Take this eating hall, for example. If 500 people came here, this hall would seem small. If only 10 people came and sat here, then the hall would seem too large. The feeling that something is small or large exists only in the mind's fabrications. If the mind does not fabricate, things simply remain naturally as they are. The hall is just like this, not small, not large. It has no name. We merely assign one. When we see a drinking glass, if we truly understand, we can see the Dhamma, because the name is merely a convention. It has no inherent size at all. For there to be small, medium, or large, a comparison must first arise. When the mind gathers together, it can awaken to understanding, become bright and radiant. It understands convention and ultimate reality. At this point, it becomes the Dhamma beyond the world. The mind then experiences the fruits of practice. Rapture and overflowing happiness arise within. The mind awakens. It awakens from delusion. It sees clearly. It truly awakens. Once it awakens, it sees the world from another dimension, a dimension that we have always looked at but never clearly seen. The dimension that it sees is that people in this world are like those living in an enormous house of the world, yet the fire is steadily burning closer with every moment. The fire of aging, the fire of sickness, and the fire of death are burning towards each individual. Beings in this world must eventually fall away and die. Whether sooner or later, it is like this throughout the entire world. Thus we awaken, the mind awakens. Previously we knew that people must die, but we did not truly see it. We knew that death is natural, that being born means one must die. But the mind did not see clearly that death is like this. It sees it in the worldly way. When someone dies, there is grief and sorrow, there is weeping, and there is separation from one another in this way. But one who has Dhamma sees it differently. What is seen as death is seen right in the present moment. One sees arising and ceasing directly. Therefore, one can put things down. One can abandon things. So we should diligently train and cultivate our minds in this way at all times, practicing repeatedly, practicing more and more, until one day we see clearly and can separate the mind from the body, can separate the mind from feelings, and can separate the mind from mental objects. We see everything as Dhamma. There is no one there at all. There are no beings, no persons, no self, no us, no them, nothing at all. Thus we must diligently train in this way. Then we can destroy delusion, transforming the mind that is still worldly. Even if one is already a virtuous and noble-hearted person, one can cross over to become a noble disciple, one who is truly noble, far removed from delusion, far removed from all inner enemies. And this is something all of us can do. In practice, both monks and laypeople are practitioners of meditation. Therefore, we should diligently cultivate and seek true and lasting happiness. It is like the lay disciple who was searching for his wealth and possessions that had been stolen. And meeting the Buddha reminded him, "You are going to search for your wealth and possessions, but what about searching for your own mind?" The lay disciple, together about 14 of them, regained their mindfulness and reflected on this. They decided that it would be better to search for their mind. We already have much wealth. Even if some of it is lost, we still have plenty remaining. But no one has ever spoken about searching for the mind. When the Buddha taught of the Four Noble Truths, and they immediately attained arahantship. This was because they had already accumulated the necessary spiritual potential. When they encountered the truth of suffering, they had first tried to recover their lost wealth. But upon meeting the perfectly self-awakened Buddha, they were instructed instead to seek for the mind. Therefore, we too must search for our own minds as much as possible. Let it be the foundation of our hearts and of our lives. It is something truly important. The mind possesses immeasurable value indeed. By caring for the mind, wisdom and understanding of the Dhamma can arise, and the heart can become fulfilled and enriched by the Dhamma. It is something of immense and immeasurable worth. May all of you be determined to cultivate and train your minds at all times. Whether you come to the monastery or remain at home, continue to practice so that success may arise, so that you may know the Dhamma, see the Dhamma, and realize the Dhamma. May you grow in blessings.